Hello and welcome to another episode of Warm Blanket, the podcast where we embark on a journey to see what makes us feel good about Star Trek, where is our love comes from, and what it means for us. In short, what is our warm blanket? My name is Gary, I'm your host, and I'm very honored to welcome here Nick. He is best known as the host of the popular YouTube channel Catwalski, where he dives into different aspects of Star Trek, covering episodes, news, rumors, and over the past 4 years, he became and a very well-respected member of the Trek community, and he could be easily called the news anchor of Trek. Let's give a warm welcome to Nick. Hello.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you for those kind words. I have never heard myself described in such positive light before, so thank you so much for that. I appreciate it.
It is true, because whenever I think about, Catwalski, you're always there when something happens. Like, you're literally a news anchor for the Trek community, in a sense.
Well, you know, I try to stay up on it. You know, there's a couple other outlets out there that occasionally beat me to the punch and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's I just enjoy it. You know, I enjoy sharing out the news bits, because I know after years of doing this, as you've pointed out, you know, not everybody, I mean, all the information is really publicly available, but not everybody has the time to kind of go and research it and pull it all together and figure out what's going on. So it's much easier to watch a 5 or 10 minute YouTube video that covers it all. So I enjoy doing the research piece and then getting the info out there so that I can engage then in the conversation digitally, because I have essentially started this whole thing with a few Star Trek fans, and now I've got, you know, thousands of fans of Star Trek that I talk to. I don't think they're necessarily fans of me. I think they're fans of Trek in a lot of ways, and we all get together and be able to talk on the platform. So that's why I like doing it.
I guess your success is basically there, because it's not just you talk about Trek. I'm talking about Trek, but there's a two different presentation style, and you have a very distinguished presentation style that, you know, probably more attractive to people than what I do.
Oh, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. The thing is I think it's, YouTube is such a crazy thing, and you know this, you know, being on YouTube, and as does a lot of the other guys and gals that we know that are on YouTube, you know, it's literally, sometimes it's the absolute luck of the draw, and sometimes it's just so bizarre how things either work out really great one week, and then next week they don't work out at all, and it's just this weird danger area where you just got to kind of keep grinding at it, and you know, eventually you kind of find your niche, your click, and it just starts working, and you just keep rolling with it, you know. And that also comes from a guy who has personally tried to quit YouTube like several times, and has been like, this is, yeah, I know, yeah, I've been like, I really don't want to do this anymore, this sucks, I don't want to do this, and yet I keep coming back to it just because I enjoy it, and you know, I just enjoy the editing process, the video making process, the conversations with people online. I just enjoy it a lot. So, and hopefully that passion comes through in the videos when people watch them.
Well, certainly from my point of view, watching many of your videos in the past, I can totally say that you know, I'm watching the videos because you're talking and you convey a meaning, convey a message that others might not necessarily get through their videos, which is an amazing thing. And we will get back to this a bit later on. This is something that I always ask from many of my guests.
Okay.
When did you get into Star Trek? I know it's quite trivial as a question, but from anyone who listened to this at the first time and you never heard of Catwalski, which I can hardly imagine, what was the biggest influence getting into the show, and then how did you get into Star Trek?
Gosh, very young. So young that I really probably couldn't put a specific date, time, or period on it. Very, very young. I was introduced to Star Trek by my dad, who he's a huge Trekkie and got me invested in really science fiction in general. He's one of us, you know, anomalous folks that loves both Star Wars and Star Trek, you know, so he had a love for both equally. So I was introduced to both at a very young age, and I remember, if I really had to give it, I would be probably towards the thing that I remember the most, which was really two things I remember the most, which was rewatching the VHS of A Voyage Home with the whales over and over and over and over and over again. That was my favorite one as a kid. And I still love it. It was just my favorite one as a kid. I loved it so much, probably because they were swearing in it, you know. and the other thing was when First Contact came out in theaters. My dad took us to this theater that was in the local area, and they had, I didn't even know this, but apparently they had coordinated with some local cosplayers at the time, which is, when you consider this, what was it, back in the 90s, you know, it's like an insane level of effort to do this, but they coordinated with local cosplayers to be there at the premiere. And they came down like before the showing started, like they had them all in the theaters and people were dressed up in Borg costumes and there was a guy dressed up like as Worf. And I remember this vividly and thinking to myself, what is happening? This is the coolest thing ever. Oh my gosh, I'm freaking out. I'm so excited. And then we obviously got to see the movie. Loved it. You know, and it was great, you know. So those are kind of like the ways, I guess you could say, my earliest memories of Trek and how I kind of started this journey. That would be the best ways to put it.
But it's interesting that you said that you had Star Wars next to it as well, and without going into, you know, deep dives and just getting a bit of a argument going on like Star Trek, Star Wars, that evergreen argument out there, which personally I don't feel like it should be out there anyway. But seeing the both, what was the most important thing, and what was that aspect that drawn you into Star Trek instead of Star Wars, like majority?
I would say that Star Wars for me was fun escapism. Like, I think even as a younger kid, and even as a teenager, really as a teenager, I began to identify that, because I watched a lot of movies and TV as a teenager, and I began to identify that Star Wars was much more about a fun escapism adventure, whereas when I connected and really started to connect with Star Trek, specifically like with The Next Generation, you know, I was watching Picard and Riker and Troy and everyone, Data, and everybody on screen, and thinking to myself, that's how I want to be as an adult. I want to be with a group of people that help each other out and that explore interests and that hang out and tackle issues and don't really have interpersonal conflicts, and they are always there for one another, and there's always like a lesson there that they learn all together. That was, I think, the difference in the connection piece, which is probably why as I got older, Star Trek stood out to me a little bit more, just because, like I said, like it was something that I wanted to be. I wanted to emulate those characters as an adult with those kinds of ethos and those beliefs of truth and integrity and research and the importance of you know, being fair and stuff like that. That's kind of who I identified with as an adult, and that's probably why it stuck with me a little bit more, and maybe stuck out, I should say, than Star Wars.
So would you say the show really affected your life in many ways, in a sense?
Absolutely. I would say that part of the reason that I joined into the service was because of Star Trek in general, and because realizing that men and women in uniform, having that connection and that, you know, that ability to be one team, one fight, was something that I really wanted to be a part of, and, you know, something that my dad was pushing me towards and stuff like that. So a lot of the pieces kind of fell into place. But to say that the influence was there from Star Trek is fair. It was definitely an influence, for sure, which has now shaped my entire life and will continue to probably shape for the rest of my entire life, forever long I live for, because, you know, the service obviously reshapes you into somebody for decades and decades. So it definitely worked out like that.
So obviously, if it's something that you cannot disclose, what is your rank then? You mentioned you're in the service, but you must have a rank, or you don't.
I do. I'm in the Air Force, U.S. Air Force. I'm an E6 in the Air Force, so enlisted rank 6, also known as technical sergeant.
I see. Okay. So what would that place you within the Star Trek universe?
I would be the night shift transportation guy after Chief O'Brien gets off shift and they need the guys, the B team, to come on to man the transporter room post prime A shift folks for the midnight shift. That would be me.
Basically your Mr. Adventure from Star Trek.
Yes. Yes, exactly correct. That's exactly correct. Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't be doing anything cool. I wouldn't be anything like that. I don't know. I think if we had starships, I may have gone a different route. Maybe tried to be an ensign or somebody who flew the ship or something cool. But yeah, if I did a hard transfer right now, they'd be like, "Yeah, I've got some cargo duty for you. You can go do that." So thanks, cool.
That's awesome. So talking about your YouTube channel, we started at the beginning, of course, and you started four years ago, roughly. What made you start a YouTube channel?
This is some kind of therapy session here. I don't know about this.
It's interesting because everyone who does YouTube started for different reasons, and I did see you from earlier videos. I think you started doing videos roughly around the time when Star Trek celebrated the 50th anniversary, plus a little bit before with the Star Trek Online.
So I essentially what it really boils down to is I had been wanting to start a YouTube channel for years before I actually did it, which I think is probably the story for most people, which is that they think about it for a long time and then they eventually finally pull the trigger and make it happen. I had gone through a significant series of life-changing events that left me kind of open to experiencing new things and trying new hobbies and activities and things like that. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going to flick this camera on. Which I had, I think at the time it was like the cheapest Logitech camera you could buy. If you go back and look at some of those, they're rough. And I said, I'm just going to start making videos, and it doesn't matter if anybody's watching them. What's important is that I am going to do this because I've always wanted to do it. I'm either going to do this and enjoy it, or I'm going to do this and be able to cross this off my list and basically say, well, I tried that and it didn't really work. And what's interesting is I started it as like a weird everything channel. I was doing Let's Plays of StarCraft 2. I was doing movie reviews. I was doing trailer discussions. I was all over the place. And right to say that it was right before, I think it was maybe just a few months before Star Trek's 50th, I made like a little video tribute set. It was just a slideshow video because back then all I was using was Windows Movie Maker.
I remember I was using the same thing at the beginning.
Yes. So that was which was ironic. We can get into that later, but ironically, it was more challenging than some of the more modern software I use now. But it was just a slideshow with the inner light played on a flute over it, and I made it as I love Star Trek, and I wasn't really thinking my channel was Star Trek related at the time. It was just I just made it at the time and moved on. And kept making all these Let's Play plan channels. And then I did my very first, okay, I'm quitting YouTube, I'm not going back to that maneuver. And I remember I got like a comment randomly, a notification through Gmail, and I clicked on it and it took me to the video, and the video had exploded. It had thousands and thousands of views and all of these comments on it, which I didn't even know were even there. And I was like, oh, you know, people really like this, I'll make another one. So then I made another one. And then I think I made another, like I think I made three of them. And from there, it was like, okay, people like Star Trek. It's the 50th anniversary. I play Star Trek Online. Why don't I do a series on the path to 2409, which was their whole lore background for the game? And that is pretty much all she wrote after that. I started doing that, and then I started doing news, and then Discovery got announced, and it just kind of continued to snowball from there and just kind of dominated the channel and just became a Star Trek channel, which is also probably why I don't have a Star Trek themed name at all for the channel. It has nothing to do with Star Trek at all, but that's
the other thing I wanted to touch on as well, because I know personally, but the audience and whoever are going to listen to this in the future, 200 years from now, might want to know why was this guy called Katwolski?
So I remember a similar situation where after I had made the decision, okay, I'm going to do this, now I've got a couple cool name, because all the cool YouTube channels have cool names. And I remember thinking there to myself, like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I was coming up with all of these random names, and they'd all, of course, were taken, because, I mean, everything is taken now on the internet. So it's, so I was kind of like, all right, well, what I'll do is I'll make something so obscure that literally no one can find me on YouTube if they search for me. No, I was just like, I'm going to come up with something that represents me, that represents a couple of my interests. So essentially what it boils down to is the name itself is actually a combination of two separate franchises. A Ketwal is a, I would say, like an elephant-looking creature. It's one of the creatures that George Lucas had superimposed into the Mos Eisley Cantina to replace the Wolfman during one of the special edition releases, which is so obscure, which actually used to be my my channel logo too, by the way. But so that was that, and then but Ketwal was taken, and I was also concerned as well. Ketwal was taken in some areas, but I was also concerned, like, well, what if I ever make it really big and I have 100 million subscribers and Lucasfilm sues me for stealing the name Ketwal? So I was like, I have to do something different. So then I added the Esky at the end of it, which is Kowalski, which is an homage to a character, one of my favorite characters in Stargate SG-1, who always has the unfortunate script that he dies in every reality, essentially, that he ever appears in. And he's an original character from the movie, and then he dies basically in every episode they bring him in from different realities. I think he only survives once, but I love the fact that every time he shows up, it's like, oh, and he was always like, he's gonna die, how is he gonna die, here we go. So I really enjoyed that, so I just kind of put them together, and that's really all she wrote. And now here I am, as obscure as I possibly can be. So
this is interesting how you mentioned, because I know you told me this story before, but now that putting things, puzzle pieces in my head together, Kowalski is the one person who always comes back and dies and comes back and dies. Like, is it reflecting your internal struggle of continuing and getting back to YouTube all the time?
Yes, I thought of that before I started 4 years ago. That's definitely what I meant, and that's the story I'm sticking with. Yes.
So the many returns of Kowalski.
Is the many returns of Ketwalski, yes. Most of the times I've quit, I think, are transparent, really, to the audience that views my channel. But I know that internally it's a discussion that happens fairly often, and even happens more frequently here in the house, where I think my wife probably just has like a marker on the calendar every 6 months where I come to her and I'm like, I hate this, I don't want to do this anymore. And she goes, oh, well, all right, well, don't delete the channel, you might want to go back to it. No, I'm never going back to it. I throw all my filming equipment into a box and shove it into the closet. And then a week later, I'm ripping it all back out because I was laying in bed in the middle of the night having a fever dream about some issue in Star Trek that I needed to talk about. And that's my life. That's the life I live right now.
So getting back to your roots in terms of starting this channel, I did notice something that I actually just found out today when I was doing some little peeping on you.
Stalking, that's fine, stalking.
Yes. Tell me about the Tales and Songs of Bajor. How did that happen?
I like how you said, how did that happen? Not anything. How did that happen? Like it was an accident.
I'm sure it wasn't an accident.
It wasn't an accident. So, well, as I was going through the origin stories of my channel, I finished up the path to 2409, and I was like, all right, well, that was cool. People like the lore. I'm still doing the Let's Plays of Star Trek Online, so I want to keep talking about Star Trek Online. So I was like, well, what else can I talk about lore-wise that's inside the game itself? So there's actually two video series, which I think the other one is actually hidden, so I don't think you could see it. So I did two of them. One was the Tales and Songs of Bajor, and the other was the last Words of the Daywans or something like that. And the Tales and Songs of Bajor are actually the extended reading material that is attached to a specific mission inside of Star Trek Online, where you're at Bajor and you're dealing with the founders, and you have to like find a specific passage in a story in one of the books, and it's like this whole thing. And basically, there's a bunch of other stories and passages that are attached to that that you can read if you want to. So I decided, okay, well, I'm going to turn that into a lore series. If you really want to go really behind the curtain here, so like the Tales and Songs of Bajor thumbnail was inspired by the old school Lord of the Rings animated movies that they used to do. I don't know if you've ever watched any of those with the horrific singing that they have. Oh yeah. So the title, the thumbnail cards were in the font and the coloring and the style that they were written was inspired by those, like by that title cards, because I really wanted to capture this like old tale, because that's what they were. They were these old tales. So I wanted to kind of attach it to that, kind of like this is an old story that people tell each other now, which is similar to the lore of Lord of the Rings in some regards. So I got that for the thumbnail. And then in terms of the effects, I had this vision in my mind of I want the page turning effect as if the book itself is actually turning a page. Of course, I was still using the Windows Movie Maker at the time, so there was no effect like that that I could just magically do. So I just did the swiping slide transitions on a book that I created in Photoshop and then added in the text and all the images that were there to kind of add a little bit of visual aid to the discussion. And then, I don't know, I think if I remember right, I think I had like a weird accent while I was talking during those. I don't know what the hell I was thinking with that. One of the things I did enjoy about that was the cool tavern music that I added to the beginning and the fire embers effect, which I still will use that exact same fire ember effect for different videos to this day. But yeah, that was just, it was kind of my first crack. That one and the Daywans was kind of my first crack at really getting into stylizing my videos a little bit based off of what the topic was. And that was kind of the really the precursor to the Catrakark series that I did later on. I think that was probably the groundwork, my first effort into a more stylized lore video, which led eventually to the Catrakark series that I wound up doing, honestly, probably like a year or two later.
Yeah, it is quite a lot. Even you took on some good data fast. I think that was the time when I subscribed to your channel as well. Around that time, and, you know, the
Soong Files, yeah.
Soong Files, and
I actually forgot about that series. I was all over the place with the lore, man. If you go through the playlist, I was doing Semper Exploro, where I was exploring places in Star Trek Online. I was doing the Soong Files, which dealt with extended canon stuff. I was also doing, I don't even remember the name of the series now, but there was another lore series that I did that utilized the Star Trek GUI interface, the LCARS, that had also Majel Barrett's voiceover at the beginning where it was accessing library data and that stuff like that. That's had a few different iterations. And then eventually, over time, I just kind of dropped the lore discussions essentially from the channel. Just because it wasn't that I wasn't enjoying it, it's just that other people were doing it, and they were doing it substantially better than me, and it was just not something I was like, all right, well, I don't want to commit to just being a lore channel when there's so many other lore channels that exist out there that do it way better than I do, so I decided to change things up and go different directions, but yeah, there's quite a few on there.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the reason why you started rumor busting, in a sense, because you did a fair amount of debunking and rumor busting in your channel as well. Not going into too much details and not to offend anyone, of course. But you do that well, and I think the community needs your voice, because I don't really see any other people who did that. I mean, I kept aside from it for a while, and I don't really see too many things, but. Thank you
for doing it
for us.
It was something that needed to be done. I would say that at the time when I did the very first video, number one, I had no idea of the Pandora's box that I was opening at that moment. It was really just a video I made kind of out of frustration. I actually wound up in the very first video I made, there was like a graphic that I used that explained the whole 25% alternate license thing. And it was a graphic I made while I was at work. I was on a mid shift one night and I was just sitting there watching one of their videos and I was just getting so frustrated with what they were saying. And so I made that graphic and I was like, well, I'm going to make a video about this. It'll be a one-off. It's going to be dangerous, but whatever. And it opened up a Pandora's box. And it's kind of shaped the channel in a lot of ways now, more than I could have ever possibly imagined at the time. I had no idea the impact it was going to have on the channel and my reputation in the community and the level of interaction it was going to bring to me, both positive and negative, because there was quite a bit of negative attached to that. It really wasn't being done at the time, and I'm not saying that to toot my own horn. I think it was just something that I think a lot of, based off the feedback that I got at the time, and even still now, is something that a lot of people were thinking about, but nobody was saying at that moment, and nobody was like, well, let's get something out there to really combat what's being said, and I think people were just kind of taking it for face value, and I think that now, through the videos that I've made and many other people and discussions online and different forums and Reddit threads and stuff like that, I think it's really started to spread around the internet of people not just taking these things at face value anymore. I do think that it has improved, and I think a lot of other voices have joined in on the discussion as well, in a positive way, you know, and I think it's helped reduce some of the rumors that are kind of getting spread around. It also increases people's resiliency to just accept things at face value. So I think in the end it worked out really well for the community.
Absolutely, and as I mentioned, in behalf of a community, or at least people who agree with me, thank you for doing that, because I think without you it would have gone out of hand quite well, and would have caused a lot of trouble for many people. No, that was difficult for sure. And again, thank you.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. You know, I didn't do anything. All I did was say what everybody else was thinking, which was that some of this shit seems really suspicious. It doesn't make any sense. And I just put words to sound and made a video. And if you look at the comments on that, those videos, when I have to make them now, and I say have to because I really don't like making them anymore, people still have the same kind of reaction, which is thank you for clearing this up. I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate that. So I'm glad it was beneficial. I'm glad people enjoyed it. I'm glad it was beneficial.
No, it is. So aside from the whole YouTube media, because we talked about that a lot, when someone shouts from the very far, Star Trek, what is the first thing that comes to your mind?
The very first thing that comes to my mind when somebody says the word Star Trek is just a flood of images, I would say. Just a flood of images from the different shows. Just all over, really. It's my ears perk up, and I internally, you know, run down to my mind's index of all things Star Trek related and get ready to engage in some kind of conversation that is related to the franchise. And yeah, it's just I just think of all the shows and just everything all at once, really. It's just kind of a flood of images. Nothing particular stands out, but it's always on my mind and I'm always ready to talk about it. So it's just, yeah, it's just always there.
Have you ever turned anyone Trekkie?
I wouldn't say that I've turned anyone Trekkie. I would say that what I have noticed with the introduction of Discovery and now Picard is that a lot of people that I work with and that I know in my life have turned themselves onto Star Trek and come to me with a lot of questions of essentially what the hell is going on, or okay, so I finished this, now what should I watch next? So I wouldn't necessarily say that I've turned people into Trekkies or converted anybody, but I would say that I have been an ambassador and assisted folks to continue their Trek journey into the unknown, essentially, if that makes sense.
What is the obviously the audience won't be able to see this, but I I can spy a Romulan warbird in your shelf. Is that a Romulan warbird?
It is. It's actually it's in a box. It's an unopened box of one of the Romulan warbird attack cruiser toys that came out in the early 90s. It's one of the giant
Playmate
ones. Yep, and it's got the sounds and all that stuff attached to it. I had one when I was a kid. Actually, I had all of them. My dad being a huge Star Trek fan, so we had the Enterprise D one, we had the Klingon Bird of Prey, we had a Romulan one, the old school TOS Romulan one, we had the Borg Cube one that lit up, and they all came with stands, and we had a Romulan one, and so we had a bunch of them. We were always playing around with them and stuff like that, and as the years went by, for whatever reason or another, the Romulan one got lost. And it was actually about 2 years ago that I was at my dad's house, and I was like, oh yeah, man, I really wish we had that Romulan one. I'd love to put it in the background of one of my videos or maybe show it off to people, because it was my favorite. I love Romulans, is my jam. They're my fave. And I love the Dedardex Warbird, which is what that is. And you know, I think it was a few months later for like Christmas or my birthday or something like that. And, you know, I checked the mail and sure enough, my dad found one on eBay and got it and sent it to me.
Oh.
And now it's sitting up there on the old bookshelf. So yeah, definitely. I used to play with a lot of the toys as a kid. And yeah, now I've got that one that sits in the box. Doesn't get played with.
So is there any other collection any other thing that you collect in regards to Star Trek? I can also see, obviously the audience, again, cannot see. Sorry about that, guys. You have a fair amount of goodies in your shelf. And is that a vinyl for the motion picture?
It is a vinyl for the motion picture. That was also a gift by a gentleman who I worked for, actually. He knew of my affinity for Star Trek and saw it one day at I think just like at a vinyl store. He picked it up for me. I have a bunch of Star Trek stuff. I have so many little Star Trek toys. I've got the Star Trek Roblox characters that you can build. I've got models. I've got the vinyls. I've got a lot of books. I've got T-shirts. I've got all sorts of paraphernalia. Most of it's put away right now, just because we have everything kind of packed up currently. But yeah, I know I have a lot of Star Trek stuff, a lot of Star Trek and Star Wars. Those are probably the two things that I kind of collect on, and I have a lot of stuff associated with them.
Now, this is something that I asked from Chris and Damien before, and obviously having them known as Trek collectors and have a massive amount of ships and other memorabilia, what if the one thing, if Q would appear in your room right now and tell you that, hey, I'm going to take away everything that you have related to Star Trek, but you can only keep one thing. What would that one thing be that you would keep?
That's a tough question. Not to get sappy with it, but I probably would keep the Romulan Warbird. I probably would, just because it's something, it's the thing that my dad got me, and it reminds me a lot of my childhood playing around with it and stuff like that. That's the thing I'd probably keep.
And there's no bad choice.
And there's no what? There's no bad choice. That's true. That is true. I mean, they're all really good items, you know. They're all really great. I don't want to get rid of anything ever. You know, I even keep all the pieces of the Worf Lego toy that I have that fell on the floor and burst it into a million pieces, and I don't have the instructions on how to put them back together. So I just have those in a bag because I'm not getting rid of it. I keep it all. But that is what I would keep if Q were to come in here and try to take something from me, or everything except for one thing.
No, that's awesome. So as you probably know, as we talked about it at the very beginning off camera, and so this podcast is basically, we're trying to find out what's our warm blanket, what that makes feel good about Star Trek. As I often refer to Star Trek as a warm blanket for me, because that comforts me in many ways, and not just especially in this time, of course, because we live in this crazy lockdown and all sorts of shenanigans going on in the world globally that we have to deal with. But when aside all this, what is that one thing, or what is that thing that you can always go back in terms of Star Trek and you're like, you feel happy? What is that one thing that makes up your warm blanket?
That makes up the warm blanket. You know, I think it's just, it's what Star Trek means to me, which is kind of a funny thing to say now, but it's what Star Trek means to me, which is, I essentially created Star Trek in my life as a warm blanket. You know, when I was a young teenager nerd living in my parents' house, which is, I think, a common story for a lot of folks. I didn't have a whole lot of friends. I didn't really go out and play or anything like that. I spent a lot of time playing video games, online video games, messing around on my computer, stuff like that. And then I eventually started seeing reruns of Star Trek The Next Generation on Spike TV. And it just became part of my routine where I would come home from school and I would grab a soda from the fridge and I would sit down and I'd watch two or three episodes that were going to play on television. And it allowed me to escape the reality of my life and everything that was going on around it and just experience what was happening there. And it was just such a comfort, again, to see these people in the future working so well together and doing all of the right things and standing up for truth and justice and integrity and compassion and love and discipline and loyalty. All of these things that were being presented to me were in a formative years of my life. That's kind of my warm blanket, is when I click on Star Trek, regardless now of any of the shows or any of the movies, that is the neuron pathway that my mind travels whenever I think about or experience anything Star Trek related, which is this has that connection to those formative years, and that's how I feel when I watch it. So it just kind of invokes that feeling within me. So it's just something that kind of just happens naturally. I don't even really think about it, and it, you know, it's just, that's what it kind of means, though. It's like, it's essentially what Star Trek, what element of Star Trek is the warm blanket, I would say, is Star Trek itself is the blanket for me and what it means internally. It's how I feel when I watch it, if that makes sense. I don't know if that's a complicated answer.
It is, but I think I get it. I think, okay. I get it. Yeah.
That means no. That's fine.
No. Absolutely. No. Everyone has a different opinion of, you know, what makes them comfortable and what comforts them about Star Trek. And for the handful of people I had the fortune to talk to, ever since I started this venture of mine with the podcast, everyone has a different, but essentially comes down to one point. That why do we love Star Trek, and it is beautiful. I love it so much, and thank you very much for sharing it with me and with the audience as well. And the reason is because not the reason. The thing is, yeah, the conclusion. What is up with you, Gary? Just finish the sentence. No, like. When I did my pilot for this podcast and talked about my warm blanket, I excluded anything new happened after the Enterprise finished, because even though I'm watching them and everything, but they are like, as I distinguish them, as pillows in my imaginary bed around my blanket.
Yeah, I got you.
If I have to go that way. How do you feel about the new shows in a sense? I mean, I know you made loads of different videos on the topics on each show, so even Discovery, Picard, and the Cabin movies. Are they, and again, no wrong answers here either.
Yeah, okay.
Is there any, do you feel the that sign of that kind of warm blanket that Star Trek represents, they are still there in part?
I would say, speaking as fairly as I possibly can be, which is kind of what I'm known for, which is to be as very fair as I can, Star Trek Discovery Season 1 was not that at all, in my opinion. Not for me. Not to say that other people don't feel that way. Yeah, but for me, definitely not. Was not a warm blanket for me. It did not have that feel. I do believe that there was a concerted effort on the half of the writers and the showrunners in Star Trek Discovery Season 2 to reignite that warm blanket feeling. I think the one of the main reasons that Anson Mount's character was the breakout hit of Discovery Season 2 is almost every scene that he's in and all of his dialogue is centered around that warm blanketed feeling. He exudes the warm blanket. So I think that that bled into the show in a lot of ways to kind of give it that feel in stronger areas, depending on which episode you're talking about. Do I think the season as a whole still encapsulated it? Not quite, but I do believe that it has gotten better at that. With Picard, it is arguably a totally different beast, even though I know a lot of people like to kind of compare the two shows. It's arguably a wildly, wildly different show in terms of tone and really what they're going for. I do believe that Picard had, you know, to kind of dig too further into the analogy of blankets, but I think that Picard's blanket wasn't necessarily it was a familiar blanket, but it wasn't the same blanket, if that makes sense. It definitely felt much more blanketed than Discovery was. Felt maybe more like I was wearing a pair of socks. You know, for Discovery Season 1, it was more of like a pair of socks. Discovery Season 2 is more of like a jacket and some pants. And now this Picard feels a little bit more like a blanket, but not necessarily exactly the same way. But I do believe that was by design. Again, being as fair as I can, I don't believe that they were intending it on being the same familiar warm blanket that we are all accustomed to. And I think that is probably one of the reasons that there is a faction of fans that do struggle to embrace the new shows beyond any kind of script issues or you know, plot problems and stuff like that, where they just flat reject the new shows, period, because it doesn't feel exactly the same as the other blanket. It's just a newer, different blanket, I think, for Picard especially. But it definitely still felt like a blanket to me.
No, the same, and I get what you're saying, especially with Picard. I can totally relate to that myself. But hey, everything is with Star Trek, there's no wrong thing, and that's what I try to promote myself as well from the very beginning, because you know there's been frictions in the internet and then online, especially with this what's wrong and what's not wrong. There's nothing wrong, and I think I made a video as well, like what being a real fake fan and playing a real fan, like why you're just a Star Trek fan. It doesn't matter if you only like Discovery or the original series or the animated series for crying out loud, and you don't like anything else, you're still a Star Trek fan. And yeah, but that's a whole different discussion for another day.
Well, you know, it is, you know, the thing is, you know, even me and my dad for years, like him and I would go back and forth because he would refer to The Next Generation as my Star Trek, which it was, and his was the original series, you know. And he would always, oh, your Star Trek does this, oh, why don't you get a couple more kids on the bridge, that seems real smart, why don't you do, like, you know, kind of like the like a joke, you know, and kind of, but it was still like criticisms versus each show, you know. And I would fire back about you know, Shatner's overacting and hokey plots and stuff like that, you know. And it's just like you said, like you're a fan, you know, and it doesn't really matter when you have hundreds of hours of content to go through. To expect everyone to love every single second of those hours is ridiculous. To expect that every single second of all of those hours to be made specifically tailored for your tastes as an individual is ridiculous. You cannot point to me any season of any Star Trek show that had a perfect season. No Star Trek show has ever had a perfect season where every single episode was universally loved, hands down, everybody loved it. It's impossible, because that's just not what these shows are. There's so much content in there. So, you know, just because you don't like it, that's okay. You know, it's,
yeah, exactly.
It's a discourse that people have to struggle with, which is, just because you disagree with that person means now you have to suddenly think that you're right and that other person is somehow wrong for disagreeing with your opinion. And then that's when the fighting ensues. And it gets out of hand, I think, sometimes, in a lot of ways.
And, you know, you basically talking to the guy who embraces the joy of Star Trek V: The Final Frontier, which I know a lot of people despise, but I still, and you know, whoever say whatever, you can give me millions reasons why the Star Trek V is not the best movie. I'm still gonna love it.
Right, and that's the thing that's the thing is, it's fun to have the conversation, but ultimately it's important to remember that everybody is a Trekkie, and it's okay that another group of people or another person likes it and that you don't. I mean, I saw a comment on one of my videos a while back now, but that somebody had said that they actually preferred Star Trek Discovery Season 1 to Star Trek Discovery Season 2, which is a wildly unpopular and uncommon opinion. And yet, that person is not wrong for saying that. It's just they identified more with the first season of Discovery than just because most people are like, oh, okay, you know, I would disagree with that, but it still allows you, you're not hurting anybody. You know what I mean? We're not talking about like somebody saying, well, I like murder, so therefore I should be allowed to do it. Whether you disagree or not is your problem. No, we're not talking about murder. We're not talking about anything that's hurting anybody. We're just talking about people's tastes of a television show, you know? And I hate to break it down to those basic elements, but it's what you identify with. It's what you connect with. It's just how you feel, you know? And it's, who cares? You know, I mean, if you like it, one thing, and I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but I could give you a list of things that I enjoy that if you were to just go onto Twitter or Facebook or Instagram and stuff like that, that the majority, you would think that people weren't allowed to enjoy those things. You know, like the new Godzilla movie that came out recently is a movie that I loved. I loved that movie so much. I thought it was so cool. It was just the coolest thing ever. I saw it in the theaters. I loved it. Then I went online and people were just like, that movie sucks. It's boring. It's lame. Nobody like, and I'm like, what the hell? You know, like it's, I loved this movie. It was so good. Like the hell with you guys. I don't need your opinion. I know that I enjoyed it, you know, and that's all that really matters is I enjoy it. So yeah, sorry for going off on a tangent, but
That's all good. And on that note, what is the future for Katowski other than quitting and coming back?
Well, I mean, that's definitely in the future. There's no I don't really know. You know, I'm making a few videos here and there. Obviously, we're kind of in a news and review limbo status right now, just because the shows are kind of in various stages of hiatus because of the pandemic going on right now. But obviously, once Discovery comes out, I'll be doing reviews and recaps of that. The one that I'm most excited about and that I'm potentially going to be doing a fun animated style review of which is the Lower Deck series, which I'm super excited to see because that's one of the more interesting ones because I have no idea really what that's going to be like. But yeah, I mean, I'll be here. We're going to be covering the news. We're going to be beating back any crazy, crazy rumors that come up. I'll be making some weird videos. I've got a new video that I'm working on that I've been working on for quite a while mentally. That's been something that's been on my mind that I can't believe that a lot of people aren't talking about, which is The Mandalorian versus Star Trek Picard.
I've got I did see that you're promoted recently.
Yeah, so I got that coming down the pipe as well. It's going to be probably two parts just for the length of the discussion. I don't want to make it a super long video, but yeah, that's something I'm thinking about as well. And you know, just making different videos, kind of seeing what kind of tickles my fancy a little bit. So. But I'll be around. I'm not going anywhere, even if I quit 5 times a year. I'll be around.
And anyone who listened to this in the far future, because that's when the podcast will, not far future, but in the future when this podcast will be released, and please go and check out these videos. I'm sure they're going to be awesome.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it'll probably be up soon. So, yeah.
Yeah,
hopefully it'll be up by
then. Well, Nick, thank you very much for joining me. I really appreciate that you spent this time with me. It was really good. I think we got to cover a lot of things, and I'm glad that we were able to connect in a really delightful the way, and I hope my listeners enjoyed the conversation too. Help me out if anyone wants to connect you other than YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, or is that these are the main channels that you are in?
Yeah, Twitter and Twitter, Facebook, and really YouTube, you know. But those are the best way to get in touch with me is probably through Twitter or YouTube. I'm available. So if I see your message, I will try to respond to it. I get a lot of messages, so if I don't respond, don't take it personally. But if I do see it, I will attempt to respond.
Either be the guy.
Well, hey, you know, Gary, I appreciate you bringing me on, man. I was very excited when you started this podcast, and then you called it Warm Blanket. You've been calling Star Trek a warm blanket, I think, since I've known you, so for the past couple of years now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I thought it was a perfect, unique title for it, and I was very excited to see that you had started it and kicked it off, and I wish you the best. I hope it takes off and continues to grow, and you get more great people to have conversations with and people to interact with here, and I hope it continues to grow. I'm very excited for it.
And I really hope that I'm going to see you again soon in the podcast as well, because this is not only the only appearance that you made, so I hope you're going to be back.
Of course.
For some passion.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you again for being here. Thank you again, listeners, for listening to another Warm Blanket episode, the podcast where we are in our quest to find out our warm blanket. Live long and prosper.